We go back into the archives today to hear one of our favorite interviews from the past, the topic relationships. We can always stand a little education on how to handle ourselves in a relationship, right? The guest from 2014 is Carl Alasco. He wrote a book called Say This, Not That. Yes, it is that explicit. Just listen. Since this is recorded, we can only listen. No new phone calls or emails for this hour. We all have regrets about things we've said. In the heat of the moment, in the heat of passion, words get out that we soon wish we had not said. Today's guest is a psychotherapist working with families and couples, and he's seen lots of examples of the wrong things to say in all types of situations. So, Dr. Carl Alasco, doctor as in PhD, wrote a book that addresses many of those situations with clear suggestions on what to say. The book is Say This, Not That, A Foolproof Guide to Effective Interpersonal Communication. Carl Alasco has written two other books, only one title of which we can say on the radio. That's Beyond Blame. Carl writes a weekly advice column on relationships for the Monterey County Herald in California, where he lives. And he's our guest on The Exchange. Dr. Carl, thanks for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
If we take your books as a series, it would appear that this one is less about repairing damage than about not actually causing it in the first place.
I think that's a good assessment. With the difference being that I've set up a series of, shall I say, rules, guidelines about how to communicate, and they can help repair damage too, but above all, you're right, it's preventative.
Have you reached some throwing up of hands moments in therapy trying to get people to find the right words for a situation?
Let's see, where shall we start?
30 years ago.
Well, I pay a lot of attention to the book about our DNA, our programming, which we're programmed to react. And we're programmed to react not only to a physical threat, but also to an emotional threat, a threat to our status, what we consider rudeness. And we're especially sensitive when we're in a relationship. So I call that the reactive response, the RR. And so the idea behind all these scripts is to avoid triggering a reactive response.
And is the reactive response very much like the fight, flight, or freeze when you face with a physical?
It's exactly that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No difference whatsoever. Really just the same sort of physiology and
No difference at all.
Huh. The book is divided into general parts and scenes. How did you arrange it?
I start out with dating. You know, the first stages of every relationship. Move into committed relationships. And then the bulk of the scenes, there are 60 in total, 6-0. And the bulk of them are about committed relationships when you've been living together, either just living together or married or whatever domestic situation you have. There's 10 scenes for parenting and the balance for friendship and work.
And in general, is it fair to say, coming back to the fight, flight, or freeze, are we geared to respond rather like Newton's law, where every action is met with an equal and opposite reaction?
You're nailing it right on the head. That's exactly it. The idea, of course, with more advanced human development, more self-control, more self-awareness, is to realize that you don't really have to respond to everything. Or using a baseball term, you don't have to swing at every ball that's thrown at you. And not every comment is, in fact, an offense. Some things you can ignore. However, the more intense the relationship becomes, the greater the expectation. So when you come home tired or you've had a difficult day at work and you walk in the door, the expectation is that you'll be greeted with some level of understanding. If you walk into a coffee shop, you don't expect that. But walking home, walking through your front door, and you do expect that. So if you don't get it, the expectation also triggers a lot of how one could be offended.
Ah, so it's not just a matter of say this, not that. It's in a sense, it's preceded by I expect this, not that.
Well, yes. To sort of put everything into context, I started out with 5 basic rules of communication. And this book took a couple years to write. Even though it looks kind of brief.
But it's packed well. It's pretty dense stuff in here.
It's very dense. It's in fact, we now just designed an app for it, and it's free, although it involves only 12 scenes. but it's ideal for smartphone use, you know.
So if you're faced with this situation, you can punch up the app and get...
Well, to some extent. I mean, it doesn't take in the whole book. It's for publicity only, so the app is free. And I think it just type in "say this, not that" somewhere, and you'll we just put it online yesterday, so it's kind of fresh. But the idea is, in today's world, people really don't need to go into, or don't have time to go into, their childhood training and to figure out why they're behaving this way. And sometimes that's very helpful. But what I found as I moved through the years, shall I say decades, of working with people, that I became more and more directive. And instead of trying to massage the situation and trying to be understanding, I would just stop somebody and say, John, don't say that. Do you realize just what just happened when you just said that? And John would say, what? And then naturally something like, well, she's so hard to please no matter what I say. And then we'd go through some scripts, and I'd say, well, try saying this. And he'd mumble, and I'd say to Mary, well, what do you think? How does that feel? Oh, if only he would talk that way.
Okay. So it really was about prompting them to say, which is what this book is about. It really is
a set of
directions. A set of directions that we'll hear much more about after a short break. Carl Alasco is the author of Say This, Not That. We'll come back to this interview on the Jefferson Exchange in a little more than a minute. On the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're enjoying an interview from a couple of years ago with therapist, author, and relationship expert Carl Alasco. He wrote a book with very specific recommendations for what to say in a relationship and what not to say. The title couldn't be clearer. Say This, Not That. Since this is pre-recorded, we can't take any new phone calls or emails today. As we get into these five rules of effective communication very early in the book, I'm curious, Dr. Alasco, about whether this was a list that you had to whittle down from a bunch of things, or whether it was you started with a couple of basics, one or two, and then built up from there.
Yes, and you know how it is. You go to a lecture or presentation, and the presenter says, here's a takeaway. If there's one thing that you want to take home, you know, what is the most important? And so I start off with the most important, which is, to me, decide in advance what you want to accomplish. And that sounds kind of banal, but if you think about, what do I want to accomplish by saying hello? What, I want to appear friendly, right? What do I want to accomplish when I look at my partner and say, hi, honey? Well, I want to build my relationship. And what do I want to accomplish when I say something smart or critical or sarcastic? See, that's harder to define. Most people will say, well, I want to change the behavior. So I walk in to the bathroom and there's the darn wet towel on the floor again. And I want to change that behavior. I'm sick and tired of picking up this wet towel. So if I get angry and make a scene and say, can't you even pick up a towel? What do you think, we're living in a pigsty? I mean, my God, how many times do I have to clean up? What do you think, you're living at home with your mother? You know, things like that. Is that my intention? Is it my intention to get the person angry or upset or feel bad? No, my intention is to change the behavior. But I also want to do it in such a way that I don't create animosity and resentment, and, you know, because that doesn't go away. It comes back later. So it takes, and what do I say? You know, I have that actual scene in the book.
But it's really about mindful communication. You really are aware of what you're saying rather than just blurting something out.
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
All right. And of course, rule number two in the five rules of effective communication here is say only what you need to say, nothing more. So don't keep explaining yourself, I gather.
Not only that, but adding on something like you say to your son, hey, that report, you did a good job on that report. It's about time you got your act together.
Sentence two kind of wipes out the fun from sentence one.
Exactly. I mean, there's the famous but. You know, you're a really nice person, but. Say only what you need to say and don't add on the clauses at the end that create a negative message.
Rule number three, don't ask questions that don't have an actual answer, like, what were you thinking? Is that a good one?
Well, what were you thinking? We all know kind of that's like, that's more of a joke. But I focus on the why questions. You know, why are you driving so fast? Why couldn't you put the milk away? You know, sometimes we need a factual question. Why are you late? I mean, sometimes I do need to know why you're late. But sometimes the question could also be, why are you late? Implying that you're just too rude or ignorant or something's wrong with you that you couldn't get here. The thing with why questions, when they don't really have an answer, is what you're really doing is being critical.
Which gets us then into number four, do not use blame, no criticism, accusation, punishment, or humiliation.
Oh, that's enormous.
And this really then gets back to a lot of, and I noticed this too in all the scenes in the book, that you're talking about using a lot of I language, you know, rather than you are such a mess, you do mm-hmm. this, it's really like, I don't like it when this happens.
And stopping there. And I don't like it. I don't, when I walk in the bath, when I walk in the bathroom, I see a towel on the floor. I really don't like that.
And that's it. Don't bother to take it beyond that.
Don't take it beyond that. Unless you first you have to accept the idea that your partner really does want to do the best he or she can, right? I mean, that has to be the assumption. And the towel on the floor is not a deliberate attempt. Sure, it's forgetfulness, it's sloppiness, it's various things. However, creating an environment where, and this is very, very, very important about parenting, where fundamentally your child wants to comply, you know, wants praise, wants to do a good job, wants to be respectful, and all the other forces out there in the world are making it difficult. But you have to work on that idea that your child is really not there to create misery in your home, even though sometimes it can feel that way, but that's not their desire. So staying as little as you possibly can and staying away from sarcasm, criticism, and accusation, and especially humiliation. You know, the famous, can't you even learn something as simple as this?
Yeah, I can see where people would feel attacked with that kind of language. Rule number five in your rules of effective communication, always be ready to stop when things get too heated, which makes a certain amount of sense, but you're talking about disengaging from a discussion with someone you love in a lot of these cases, which also gets into not just stopping, but if you're calm and trying to not give it back as you perceive you are getting it, how do you do that with enough sensitivity to not appear like you're being condescending or controlling?
Well, you have to go back to your basic agreement. You must have an agreement, and I put this down as a must. I mean, this is indispensable in every relationship, which is when I feel overwhelmed and I have to be in charge of that decision, I have to be the one who says, I know right now I'm overwhelmed. You know, my blood pressure is up. I don't have to go into the whole physiological description. But when my blood pressure gets up, I am no longer, and there's plenty of research about this. I mean, you know, your heart rate, a man's heart rate goes up to about 80, 85, or 90, and his ability to think clearly is severely diminished. Believe it or not, women's heart rates can go up to 80 or 90, and their ability to reason is not diminished. They have to go up to about 100, 105, or 110. Heartbeats per minute. That's a physiological, I mean, of course, there's variations, but that's the physiological fact. So you have to be able to determine that I can feel my blood pressure going up, my heart rate going up, I'm not thinking well, and I need to stop. So you make an agreement in advance. And the complaint I've always heard from couples, oh, yeah, if we have that agreement, well, they'll shut me up every single moment. You know, I'll open my mouth and say, please stop. Well, in fact, when it is respected, that does not happen. Because each party is in a relationship has to be in control. And then the other party says, well, all I want to do is finish my thought. Don't shut me down. I just have to get this point out. Why aren't you letting me to, you know. Mm-hmm. But But if I'm not able to understand anymore, if I'm not able to take in any more information, I have a right to be able to walk away from that. And with the commitment to come back, that's the other part of it. It isn't just, please stop, I don't want to relate to you anymore. Otherwise, why are you in a relationship? It's right now, for the next 10 minutes or maybe even an hour, I have to be able to calm down.
But how do you communicate that in the heat of the moment when you're saying, look, I really need to back off here, and the other person says, but I need to finish my thought, the example you just gave. How do you not bellow back, just give me a moment here?
Because the agreement is when I raise my hand and start waving my hand and say, please stop, please, I need to stop, you will get that as a message, and you will respect the message that I need a break, and you will give me that break. That has to be our agreement in advance.
Dr. Carl Alasco is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a family and couples therapist in California. He is the author of 3 books. His latest is Say This, Not That, a foolproof guide to effective interpersonal communication, with 60 different scenes laid out in the book, scenarios, if you will, and ways to say the right thing, and even some gestures involved as well. Dennis in Eugene, welcome to the Exchange.
Hi. Here's my question, doctor.
Sure.
If you are a sergeant in the Marine Corps and you're trying to get some private in your platoon to get to do something, you would use probably one type of communication technique. If you were a professor in a classroom and you were talking to a student, you'd probably use another type of.
Exactly.
And if you were talking to your son or your daughter, you'd still use another type, and it could be all for the same kind of a situation. So my question, I guess, is how could you have 5 rules or 6 rules for communication when communication is so complicated and there's so many different types of people that you have to communicate with?
Thanks for the question, Dennis.
I think that's a great question. Well, we know that every situation, every environment has its own expectations. And you walk into a grocery store, the expectation is the person says, well, how are you? You don't say, well, let me tell you how I am. You know, I got a letter from my attorney today. No, it's just, how are you? Fine, and you move on. The expectation is not intimacy or sharing. With friends, the expectation is different. If you're a sergeant and you're dealing with a private, the expectation is you have a training to do. This is not a democracy where you engage in a discussion. With your child, the expectation is that you have, depending on the age, you have most of the power. So the expectation is that you will use your power lovingly and with the intention of teaching and building the relationship. That every situation has its own definition.
I made reference to this just a moment ago about the fact that in each of the 60 scenes in the book, you're not just providing words. I mean, what else is here to be absorbed by the people who read this?
Well, on the Say This side, on one side of the page, on one side, there's 2 pages, you know, they open. On the left side, it says Say This, and for all these various reasons. And they're very brief. They're very little bullet points of maybe 1 sentence or 2 or 3 sentences at the most. On the other side, don't say this, and for all the various reasons for that. So, I mean, you can take any single one, and just take one at random, and you'll see that there's really good reasons for deciding in advance what your intention is, and then saying only what you need to say. And if you say anything that's a little bit aggressive, you'll find out pretty darn soon. You know, the person's face changes, their demeanor changes, and you know that something's not going well.
You're pretty clear in the book, too, though, that body language and some other nonverbal cues are pretty important as well.
There's a tremendous amount of research about how inflection changes the message. And if you just say something like, do you want to go to a movie? And that's a nice, simple sentence. If you say something, do you want to go to a movie? I mean, that means, are you so stupid you want to go to a movie? So While English is not really a highly inflected language, we certainly can inflect it to imply our intention.
Absolutely. Okay, part one of the book is about dating, and there's an important side note even before you get to the scripts, which is you're talking about skills, not about faking it. So this is not how to pick up people, evidently.
Very definitely. There's so much strategy involved. Now, sometimes people think that strategy is a bad word because it means you're being inauthentic. But my goodness, if you really think of the socialization process of children, I mean, we're telling children all the time, you know, first grade, second grade, to use your words carefully, to not offend your friend, and to not say something that's going to get you in trouble, and et cetera, et cetera. So we teach children from a very early age, and then within the family, it's the same thing. You know, what was your intention behind me saying that? You know, you sit down at the table and you make some little snide comment about dinner. Well, what's your intention? And some people handle it pretty well, but a lot of us, we really have to think about, whoops, wait a minute, this isn't going well. In dating, you have to be, I have some rules, you know, some general, they're more like guidelines for dating, you know, things you should pay attention to.
Well, for example, explicitly and strategically state your needs, which is kind of scary to some people when they're meeting somebody for the first time. But I guess that fear would actually come from being afraid the person won't like the real you, so you don't put the real you out there.
Well, again, you know, reflecting what the caller said, if you're meeting somebody for the very first time, you keep it general, obviously. But by the third or fourth date, at some point, you have to get clear about what your needs are. And if you get the sense that the person you're dating, oh, my goodness, you know, has had 12 boyfriends, girlfriends in the last two or three years and doesn't seem to stay anywhere for more than a month or so. Well, if your intention is not just to have go out and have a good time dancing, but you really are looking for a partner, as most people are who are dating, most people, then you better get clear about that.
So scene one is what a cutie, and you essentially say, don't say, I think you're cute to a cute person. So what is the do say here? What is the say this?
Yes. On the say this side, it says, excuse me, but I've noticed you here a few times, and I wonder if you've got time to have a coffee. So you're not really saying anything about what you think about the person other than, I'd like to have a cup of coffee with you. The intention there is, do you have time to have coffee? It means, do you have time to sit with me and chat and maybe get to know each other a little bit?
And one of the other scenes in the dating section is when you're being asked to get together, take your time to give an answer. But is there the chance that taking the time to think about the answer is going to be interpreted as, I'm thinking if I got a better offer or not?
You know, it's always tricky how the other person is going to interpret it, but I emphasize over and over how important it is to take care of your own needs and to do so strategically and to do so kindly. I mean, there is a way to smile and say, do you mind if I think about that just for a moment? You know, put a little bit of body language into it, and there's ways of kind of moving your body in a way that it's you're not rigid and tight about it. You know, you're loose, and it's part of a process. And that also is a way of testing the other person to see if this person is him or herself. Well, mostly it's guys if they're going to be asking, but it's often the other way around. If the other person who's asking is loose enough to deal with you, because if you get kind of a rigid reaction, then you say, well, no.
Huh. So if you're saying, give me a moment to think about it, the person says, what, this is a problem for you? Then suddenly they've just made it one, haven't they?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, you point out that honesty is always the best policy, it would appear, that, for example, when you let people down, don't say, well, you know, my grandma's sick, I need to go visit her. You really just need to say what you are, in fact, thinking.
In dating and in early relationships, people I've come across this so many times, you're dating somebody for 2, 3, 4, 5 months. You're trying to make it work, but it's just not. You know, it's just, You don't feel it. Well, the best thing to say really is say, I'm sorry, Michael, but it's just really not working for me. And I'm sorry to offend you and hurt your feelings, but it's just not working. So I really can't keep seeing you. Much better than just disappearing and not answering your phone and making up excuses.
Right, because then with the old, well, I was busy, I had grandma's funeral, mm-hmm. whatever. You know, then the person's going to get strung along. They're going to get more hurt by that, aren't they?
Exactly.
More examples coming up of both what to say and what not to say. You'll hear the rest of the interview when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a little more than a minute. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Carl Alasco joined us a while back to talk about talking in relationships. The book is Say This, Not That. The interview is pre-recorded, so no new phone calls or emails today. I mentioned the two earlier books. Beyond Blame is one. I can't say the other one in full title on the radio, but it's Emotional BS. You really are about being direct then and being very honest with what your intentions are right from the get-go.
That developed over the years. Early training in psychotherapy was to be very neutral. But then, as technology advances and everything advances, people really don't have time to... I mean, the idea that you see a client in therapy, once or twice a week for 1 or 2 years, it just doesn't happen anymore. It's mostly problem solving. So people want not exactly advice, but they do want some very firm direction as to what's working and what's not.
Kind of a set of guidelines or a set of rules of the game, and
mm-hmm.
rules of engagement, I guess we could say.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that really stands out, too, in the dating section is not just being honest with people, but not too honest. Hey, you're really cute, I've noticed you. I'd like to have coffee with you, that sort
mm-hmm.
of thing. But there's also a lot in this section about the ability to pace, that you have to maintain pace, which I'm sure is tricky for both partners because, your body may be saying, hey, forge ahead, let's get into bed tonight. But your psyche is saying, slow things down, let's see how things go here. So I guess there are two issues to deal with here. Number one, how do you tell your body to shut up? And number two, how do you convince the other person you're interested enough to want to continue?
Well, it's interesting because we bring that back to the very beginning of the program, Jeffrey, when we were talking about the reactive response. I mean, your body's not necessarily ever your friend in these situations because we're still working with bodies that haven't changed much in 1,000, 5,000 years. I mean, our reactive response, our fight-flight syndrome is very, very powerful. And, you get people, there's so much research. It doesn't take much. You put people in a room and you do this and that, and pretty soon they're acting not very well. And, they digress and devolve very fast. So it's easy to get triggered, and negatively and positively. So one might say that the sexual impulse is a very positive trigger because, nature wants you to get excited and to make babies. And nature doesn't much care if you're happy. That doesn't care at all, really. I mean, you're supposed to stay around about 10 years to keep the baby alive. But what nature wants is babies. So we're exquisitely designed, just like most mammals, to find a mate and say, well, I want this. I want to have sex. I want babies and all that. And, of course, then our job is to restrain ourselves. Victorian England did an extremely poor job of that, but they put in all these rules and regulations about how society was to work. And they created a whole, dark shadow area of life. But on the surface, everything was extremely restrained.
Absolutely. And then behind closed doors, who knows what happened there.
Exactly.
So ultimately, the honesty extends to having to talk about these things. Like, when do you think sex is appropriate in a relationship? Is that something you are recommending saying here?
Yes. again, what is your intention? If you go very, you know, goes back to guideline number one, what's your intention? If I bring this up right away, is my intention to demonstrate what? That I'm mature, that or that I'm impulsive? What do I want to show here? How do I want to impress this other person? What do I want to? What kind of reaction do I want to get in this other person? Always in there, I have a very simple technique about taking two or three slow breaths, and that's, you know, it's been around for what, count to 10, you know, before
right.
you say
right.
count to 10.
Mm-hmm.
The simplest technique is to sit and count in as you're breathing in for 3 to 4 seconds and count 3 or 4 as you're exhaling. That gives you enough time. And if you watch diplomats and people who are very, very skilled in how they negotiate and talk, you know, really good attorneys who know how to command their language, they pace themselves, and they know how to do that. And it's a skill. It's not necessarily a personality implant.
I'm going to take a wild guess that it really would help if both parts of the conversation read this book, because if you got the one person deep breathing, taking a little time, and the other person hasn't read the book, they're likely to say, "What is taking you so long? Respond to me."
Well, I'm pretty certain that if any individual works their way through these scenes, and they're very quick, the message gets repeated over and over that a fast response is not a thoughtful response. A response that's not thoughtful indicates emotional immaturity, which indicates riskiness. Can I trust this person? If a person is not emotionally mature, can I trust your response? You can't really build a relationship with anybody if you can't trust how they're going to react.
Part two of the book is about developing a long-term relationship, and one of these scenes is about a partner whose mind seems to wander. You know, the one of the partners grabs a cell phone and starts checking messages and stuff. Are you finding this more common in your practice as you go through the years?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, what surprises me is that people think that this has been a permanent part of our life for the last decades, where it's only been 2 or 3 years. I mean, it's been at the most 5 years that the smartphones and cell phones have reached the point where they're ubiquitous, and they're really getting invasive. I mean, you see people walking down the street together; each one of them is looking on their screen,
mm-hmm. and not talking to the person next to them.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
There's also that. Then that scene is followed up by one about the silent treatment. What often starts that, and how do you counsel the receiver to work with being on the receiving end of the silent treatment?
The silent treatment is very punishing. And, again, is that your intention to punish? You know, sometimes, you know, earlier we were talking about stop, please stop. I need 10 minutes. I need an hour. And that has to be negotiated in advance, because otherwise your partner will just think that you're just stonewalling, shutting down. But when you negotiate in advance, it's a sign of maturity. It's a sign of saying, this is how my body functions. I know it well. I can only take so much stress. I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. I'm taking a break, and I'll be back to continue the discussion in an hour or even tomorrow. That way, we move ahead with the relationship. We don't overwhelm any given moment, and we avoid, and this is so critical, you avoid those battles where you really hurt the other person. You say things, then you got to go back and say, I really didn't mean to call you those names. I really didn't mean it. Well, then why did you say it? Well, because I was upset. Why were you upset? Because we couldn't stop and we get into these fights. So you really have to go back to the beginning and negotiate a way to avoid those kind of battles.
There's a section here, too, in the part about developing a long-term relationship, about which raises the question about expressing anger, even if it's not at your partner. Like if you're driving and, you know, the guy cut me off, you son of a, you know, whatever words happen to come out of your mouth. Is it important to modulate those sorts of anger responses in the presence of that important other person, even if it's not directed at that other person?
Oh, boy. Anger, we all know anger can be so destructive. Now, anger is important. Anger is a very, very, you know, if a person can never get angry, they'll never be able to defend themselves. They'll never be able to get, say no. At the same time, one of my utter absolute rules is you have a right to be angry, but you don't have a right to rage.
Mm-hmm.
The only time you have a right to rage is to defend your life or the life of your child. Then you have a right to rage. That's what it's there for.
Right. That's the fight part of the fight, flight, or freeze response.
Yeah.
And that's when it's appropriate. Yeah. Let's take a call. We have Jim in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Carl Alasco, the author of Say This, Not That.
Yes, good morning. Real quick, like, I'm 73 years old. Used to be when there was an argument or about to be an argument, we called on our friend. Now it's, well, we had to listen to his friend or her friend, not, you know, now it's, well, I think because families have dispersed all over the country and whatever, but I rarely hear people, you know, it's like the third leg of the three-legged stool. That's what gives stability. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Jim. Appreciate it.
Well, I think Jim is pointing out something that, especially for men, we don't often build intimate relationships. Going out to dinner, you see often four or five, six women grouped together, two, three women grouped together, and they're talking. Occasionally you see men doing that, but not very often. Often they're business partners or their sports buddies. Men have not been trained to use each other as resources. At the same time, you have to be careful, because if your friend is somebody who has a very, very strong opinion, all you're going to do is just reinforce your own opinion. But getting help in a relationship is very important.
Where do men tend to go for that? Because women will tell each other just about everything. Men can work together for 15 years and then one day, dude, you're married? You know?
Well, there used to be men's groups, a while ago. That sort of fell out of fashion. But although there's still enough of them around, certainly in my neighborhood and in this area, there's a lot of therapy groups for men. And that's a wonderful thing, that a man can get into a group and the agreement is we're here to support each other and to talk, and our intention is to help each other and not shame each other or humiliate each other in some way. It's very tricky because men are so easily humiliated.
Huh, interesting. So they're a little thinner skin than women in some cases?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Huh.
Oh, gosh, yes. Don't you think you've sort of seen that?
Probably. And there seems to be a lot of ego tied up with the male psyche, but I better not make too broad a set of generalizations here. The phone lines will light right up.
Yeah.
Part three of Say This, Not That is about kids and parents. And there's stuff in here about helping with homework, which raises the question for me. And yes, this does come from my own house. How do you approach the I'll never need to use this in life argument?
I find the best argument is you need to train your mind. And if you don't train your mind while you're young, it becomes more difficult to train your mind as you get older. But I don't want to train my mind with algebra.
Right, exactly. I want to train my mind with video games.
Yeah. Well, but you're part of a culture. I mean, you're part of our entire civilization, and we have decided, all of us, that a certain amount of brain exercise is helpful. And the more, it's like learning a language. I mean, it's absolutely totally proven beyond a doubt that the more languages you speak, the more flexible you're thinking. And the better you're thinking, the more efficient you're thinking. Goodness, if you can't walk a mile without panting, your whole body is going to suffer. Not just your legs, your whole body is going to suffer. So if you don't read, if you don't exercise your mind, your thinking will suffer.
So I want to skip ahead to part five in Say This, Not That, the workplace. What's the number one example there?
Oh, my goodness. This is where strategy is so critical. I mean, goodness gracious. I think people who work in stressful environments, on their way to work, they should just spend all their time thinking. I mean, I'm a big fan of thinking. I mean, I very rarely listen to radio music or anything because I just have to do so much thinking all the time. I have a lot of stuff that I'm working on, and I have to keep my mind uncluttered. So thinking about your colleague, your coworker, and the interaction that didn't go so well yesterday, what's the best way to handle it today? And going through those five rules, well, what's my intention? Well, I have to bring this person closer to me. I have to develop this person as a colleague, as a support person. I cannot make this person an enemy.
So all the same rules of relationships apply, even if it's it's a different kind of relationship, but it's still a relationship.
Oh, clearly. And strategy is so, so important. And which means I will put on a smile and act friendly, even though in the moment I may not feel friendly, but so what? That's my strategy. My strategy is to advance my career, and that's not being false. Being false is actually lying and saying something, that's not really true. But smiling and being pleasant is not being false.
There's a lot of great stuff in the book. Say This, Not That, A Foolproof Guide to Effective Interpersonal Communication. Carl Alasco, PhD, wrote it. He's been our guest today. Carl, thank you so much
for
joining
us. It's been a wonderful program, Jeff.
You've
been an excellent host. Thank you so much.